When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And hi, everybody. It's good to have you here on Listen Up. It is Grant Napier, and we talk NFL now that we have the first round of the playoffs in the books. And last night, the Rams did what they had to do against a pathetic, and I do mean pathetic, looking team in the Arizona Cardinals. Do you recall, seriously, the last time a quarterback looked as bad as Kyler Murray did last night? I mean, it's embarrassing. You know, I did a rant on this today. You know, you can make an argument DeAndre Hopkins, the most viable player in the league. Seriously. I mean, they were 10-2 with him. And without Hopkins, the offense and the quarterback, Kyler Murray, they look like they've never been on the field before. You know, the Rams look good. Give them a lot of credit. But as good as they looked is how bad Arizona was. I mean, that was embarrassing. So the playoffs are set on Saturday. You got Cincinnati at Tennessee at 1:30 Pacific. Niners at Green Bay at 5:15 Pacific. Then on Sunday, it's the Rams at Tampa at noon Pacific. And then at 3:30, it is Buffalo at Kansas City. So there you have it. You have the playoffs are set. We're down to four teams in each conference. And, of course, the championship games the following Sunday. But, boy, if you're a fan of the Arizona Cardinals, that's about as bad as it gets. That was absolutely as bad as it gets. Of course, you know, if you are a fan of the NFL, you know, it's great that they put the slogans such as inspire change and it takes all of us. And it seems like with each passing day, there's more and more disturbing news. You know, the NFL needs to get rid of their slogans. They really do. I mean, it's embarrassing for the league. Seriously. Inspire change. Let me give you a couple of examples. Yesterday, Cleveland Browns defensive tackle Malik McDowell was arrested in Florida on charges of aggravated battery on a law enforcement officer, resisting arrest with violence and public exposure. Okay. That was from an online record from the Broward Sheriff's Office. All right. According to the arrest report, McDonald beat a deputy in a violent attack that left the officer dazed and fearing a permanent injury to his right eye. Okay? So that's what happened with one individual of the National Football League. But it didn't end there because, you know, we are inspiring change in the NFL. Jacksonville Jaguars linebacker Laurenti McCray, he was arrested in Central Florida early Sunday morning. He was in a high-speed pursuit with police, all right? Police attempted to pull him over, according to the records. McCray was arrested and booked into jail just before 8 a.m. Sunday. He posted a $5,000 bond. He was released. He was charged with fleeing, eluding police with disregard of safety, to personal property, a second-degree felony. He was also issued a citation for speeding, according to the booking report. According to the police department, a patrol officer observed a white Dodge Ram pickup truck traveling at 88 miles per hour in a 50-mile-per-hour zone just before 1 a.m. on Sunday. The officer tried to initiate a traffic stop, but the driver used an expletive hand gesture using their middle finger. The officer was then joined by a second officer. They pursued the vehicle at speeds up to 100 miles per hour before calling off the chase because the vehicle was being driven recklessly and swerving across three lanes of traffic. Inspired change, baby. Let's get some more slogans on the NFL helmets and on the field. Yep, it takes all of us. It takes all of us. Inspire change. Only the NFL. Only the NFL. Freaking unbelievable. Seriously. Just absolutely embarrassing for the league. Something else that's embarrassing for the league, and I've talked about this a lot. I talked about it yesterday, and that is Dak Prescott. And I think I've shared with you, and I did a whole podcast on this today. If you did not get a chance to check it out, do so, because I talk about Dak and I talk about the problems with sports officials in this country. And it's sickening. It really is. And what Dak Prescott did on Sunday after the game, there is no place at all in sports for that. Period. It's bad. It's really bad. You know, he's getting paid $40 million. You know what he had on Sunday? A $40 million catastrophe. That's what it's wrong. Awful. Really awful. You know? Really terrible. And there's been a lot of stories written on this, and rightfully so. And it's just a shame. You know? Dak should have handed the football to the umpire instead of to his center, okay? And, you know, Prescott and the coach McCarthy were blaming the officials. How about looking in the freaking mirror and calling one of the worst plays in the history of football? And then when he was told that the fans weren't throwing debris and everything at the players, they were throwing it at the refs, he then said, credit to them then. Credit to them. It's embarrassing. By the way, the National Football League has come out and said the officials got it right, and they did. I think we knew that right after the game. But terrible. You know, McCarthy said it was the right decision to run the ball. We shouldn't have any problem getting the ball spiked. Well, you did. You did have a problem. Terrible. It's awful. You know, I mean, Prescott could have gone down earlier, could have preserved 1 or 2 seconds on the clock. You know, they probably don't score anyway on the next play, but you just don't know. But just awful for Dak Prescott to, you know, come down like that on the officials. Terrible. I'm still waiting for an apology. I haven't seen it yet, unless I missed it. Terrible. All right. If you want to get in on the program, all you need to do is hit your hand icon, raise your hand. We'll put you up on stage, and then you'll be able to join me right here on Listen Up. All right, let's get to Jeff. Jeff, how are you today?
Good. How are you, Grant?
Good.
Hey, I had a question. With Murray's play last night, the way he played, you know, the scrambling quarterback, do you think it's still advantageous to have that pocket passer like Brady and, like the pocket passer is a more advantage than the guy who just runs around? Other than, I mean, if you're a Mahomes or you're an Allen level, yeah, but a guy that's not up that elite, what do you think?
Well, look at all the teams that are in the playoffs this weekend. I think it answers your question. I mean, Allen is a guy that can run. They do the run pass option, but he is a, you know, a pocket passer. You know, Mahomes, I don't consider him a running quarterback. I consider him a quarterback that can run. But I mean, yes, I mean, Mahomes would be the guy that you would use as the answer to why you can be very successful with a very mobile quarterback. But, you know, Burrow, pocket passer, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
You look at the
Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, you look at Aaron Rodgers, you look at Tom Brady. I mean, you know, you look at Matt Stafford. I've always said this. I've been very consistent with this. I don't want my quarterback to be a running quarterback for a variety of reasons. Number one, they are susceptible to getting hurt. That's number one. And number two, I want a quarterback. I don't want a running back at the quarterback position. And I know that the game is changing. I know that there are a lot of quarterbacks that do run the football, but they tend to get hurt a lot. And quite frankly, I don't think you could succeed like that.
Look at Philadelphia, Jalen Hurts. He didn't do anything. And
nope. And
that's what scares me about the 49ers drafting Lance. If they expect him to be like a Murray type or a Hurts, or I mean, if they think he's going to be like a Mahomes, but yeah, you can think, but come on.
Well, he's got a long way to go to be Patrick Mahomes. I can tell you that.
You're right.
All right, man. Have a great afternoon. Thank you
Thanks,
very
Grant.
Much. Take care.
Thanks.
I want my quarterback to be a quarterback. I don't want him to be a running back. I just don't. And I'll take my chances with a pocket passer any day of the week. Ron, you're on with Grant on Listen App. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Grant. It's good connecting with you. If I'm talking too long, just cut me off. And
it's all good, buddy.
So I'm a longtime listener, and I probably started listening to you about 1990s. And it's funny because I'm a big sports guy. In fact, I'm in Sacramento. I'm a high school athletic director. I've been around sports my whole life. And my friends were basically saying, don't talk to him because he calls people stupid. But I actually found it entertaining. And one of the things I just want to say to you is just how much respect I have for you. Just listening to your past, I'm as a high school teacher as well. It's like, I'm always trying to encourage my students. It's like they need to work hard to get somewhere. And I remember it's when one of my sons was I think a sophomore, about 2017. He was playing football, and I'm listening to your story, and I've heard this several times because I've literally listened to every single podcast that you've had.
Thank you.
I stopped listening to 1140 the day you were fired, and it's significant because I had COVID the same day you're fired. So it was quite a day for me. But your story about, as a young kid and Marv Albert, and how you, go to Bowling Green and you're working, for hardly anything at all.
Yep.
And, I can't remember everything, but I remember, talking about your buddy George McPhee and helping him work out and driving some kind of car that doesn't have air conditioning or something. And those are the things I like telling my kiddos at school, working for whatever it was, $5 an hour or something.
That's what it was, $5 an hour, and driving 10 hours to get to the job to do a 5-minute sportscast. Yeah.
And I think that that's the stuff I think that really bothered me when you got fired, because I'm thinking of the Three Stooges, the three NBA players, and I won't say their names, that came out and called you a closet racist. But I was so offended because I'm thinking how much more difficult it is to be one of the 32 announcers in the NBA than to be a gifted athletic person and make the NBA. So kudos to you. And another thing, I remember a caller called you, and it was on the podcast or however this works, and they said, how did your wife and your kids, feel about this? And you specifically, I don't like talking about personal things, but I knew, it's like my wife and I have three sons. It's like they hurt worse than I do when I'm going through this stuff. And I want to say, I think you've been very transparent in regards to how this whole thing is real. You have gone through specifics, what have happened to you. You've talked about, I recall something about being a disc jockey and making funeral reports or something like that.
Klotz Flowers on East Wooster Street in 1982. I remember the street and the name of the flower company. Yes, indeed. The funeral report brought to you by Klotz Flowers on East Wooster Street in Bowling Green.
It makes me laugh because I'm old school. I'm about 10 years younger than you, but I started working as a paper boy when I was 11. So I think about, like, people worked hard, and I'm thinking you were going to do whatever it took, to get there. And you were like excited about doing it. I had a son who went to school in Chicago, and he played basketball, but he had a friend that was from Decatur. And I was thinking, like, you had some kind of job there.
Yes, for 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. $12,300 was my first full-time job in TV in Decatur, Illinois at WAND. I think you talk about, students. I've had this conversation with my brother for many years. He just retired as a math teacher in high school on Long Island. He taught for, almost 35 years math at a very difficult school district, Freeport High School, 90% Hispanic and Black. Were the students. And so my brother and I have had so many conversations about his job, because I worked hard to get to where I was. But once I became the TV announcer for the Kings and on the radio every day, I never ever thought of it as work. And I always used to respect and admire my brother so much because of the stories that he would tell me, you know, teaching in an environment like that. He told me that, you know, you'd have 30 kids in the class. Mm-hmm. And on the first day, you knew right away that you had 10 of the 30, no problem. They were going to do great. And you wouldn't even have to do that much for them. He said, then you had 10 kind of in the middle that were on the fence that you'd really have to work hard with to get mm-hmm. them into the right perspective. And then he said you had 10 students. And he said every year, he said you knew the 10 students that no matter what you did, it would be near impossible. They didn't care. They didn't want to learn. They didn't have a family nucleus at home. They, in many instances, didn't have a mom or dad. And if they did, they didn't care. They were constantly getting in trouble. And I remember talking to my brother about these types of stories every year. And I used to say to myself, man, I don't even work for a living. My brother is the one that's working. My brother is really the one that's making a difference in the world. I'm announcing sports, and I've always looked at my job that way.
Well, I remember some podcast, and maybe you did around Thanksgiving or something, but it was you would say something, or this is what I'm thankful for. And I realize that. I think that you're in a position, and you got it. It's like you were thankful for doing that. And, yes. You know, I completely admire that. So I'm going to ask you a question. And this, like I said, if I'm going too long,
no, you can ask me anything you want. I enjoy the conversation.
So Grant, question going back to Doug, and I'm going to tell you, I wasn't a big fan of Doug on the radio station. In fact, I loved him as a player because defensive. I actually had a jersey from him, but I didn't like. I thought he was distracting. I thought he laughed a lot. But that's my personal opinion. But were you shocked when he did not get your back?
I was absolutely floored. I was beyond shocked. Doug and I had numerous conversations between Sunday, May 31st, and June 2nd when I was fired. Both. On the phone and via text message. And he had told me on several occasions during that 48-hour span, Napes, what can I do for you? You know I've got your back. You know that this is bullshit. I mean, really, these are the conversations we had. And I said, well, you can speak up for me. That's what you can do. And he said, Napes, you know I got your back. And I said, I sent him a text message that said, you know, I quoted Martin Luther King, in the end, we will not remember the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. I sent him that on Tuesday morning. And he said, Napes, if I was being silent, I wouldn't be calling you five times a day and asking how you and your wife are. You know, I wouldn't be texting you about what can I do for you. And I said, Doug, you, I already told you what you can do for me. You know, you can speak up and do what's right. And the most disappointing part, and I've been very transparent about this, I truly consider Doug one of my best friends. Doug and I went out to dinner almost every single night on the road. We played golf all the time in Sacramento and sometimes on the road, but not as much on the road. But we were always together. We were always playing golf. I mentored him. I helped him, I thought, become a very good analyst on TV. I spent a lot of time with him, talking to him at dinner about, you know, don't do this, do this. I tried to give him advice on the radio when we had very delicate. I remember the Stephon Clark shooting in Sacramento. And I remember coming into work that day at 3 o'clock. And I said, Doug, I said, I'm going to tell you right now, I am not going to address the social and political aspect of this. I will address what it was like being in the arena when the protests were going outside and they weren't letting fans in. I said, but I am not going to address this. I said, if you want to, though, I'm going to give you an open forum, because you're half of this show and I want you to be able to speak freely. So if it's something that's important to you, I want you to go ahead and do it. But then I was very honest with him. I'm telling you, it's very difficult as a sports show and as a sports caster to get into these situations without upsetting and offending a whole bunch of people. And I've always felt that way. I've always tried to stay away on my radio show from politics, religion and sexuality. Like no one even knew what religion I was. It's since come out because it's part of my lawsuit, but I never talked about my religion on the air. I never talked about my political affiliation. I never talked about whether I was a Democrat or a Republican. I never talked about who I voted for. I never bagged on a Republican or a Democrat. I never ever went into someone's sexuality because it didn't matter to me. I mean, I always, that's the way I've lived my life, both privately and on the air. And so I was always trying to give Doug advice. But I mean, Doug and I were actually playing golf the day that I made that tweet on May 31st. We had just played golf, you know, that morning up at Winchester with our good buddy who's an umpire. I mean, again, I consider Doug one of my best friends, and he completely folded up like a snail in a shell. And so, he has to do what's right for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was, yes, it was unfortunate. And I'll tell you something else. And cause I've been very honest on this. When you go through a situation that I went through, and I've talked to a lot of other people, you really learn in life who your real friends are. And you really know that there are people that you weren't sure are your friends. And through this situation, I realized that they are unbelievably loyal, like to a point where it's blown me away. And then there are other people where I thought were really close and were very loyal, and it turned out that they weren't. So, you know, the one thing I have learned in the past year and a half, I truly know who my friends are in life now.
So I wasn't as surprised, and I don't know if you remember this incident, but I had to look it up. It's stuck in my brain. But back in the summer 2019, the White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson had hit this home run off of this pitcher from the Royals. Okay. And you and Doug were discussing this. So what happens is this pitcher hits Anderson, and then Anderson, who's African American, he calls him a weak ass F and N word.
Right.
And I remember you specifically asked Doug, like, this is wrong, isn't it? Like, how is it that he could say this? And I think maybe he got a day suspension or something, or at least the pitcher did for this. And he would not respond at all. And I remember that thinking in my mind, it's like Doug is not responding. And this is just my perception, because if he responds to this, then he's going to be a pariah or something among, you know, whatever, his own people or something like that. So when this did happen to you, for some reason, I thought of this incident. I thought that he's just not going to respond because it's going to hurt him more than he thinks it's going to hurt Grant. So right. I was really bothered.
Well,
by that.
You know, I appreciate that. You know, yesterday was MLK Day, right? And one of his most famous sayings is, you know, our life begins to end the day we remain silent about things that matter. And I've never lived my life that way. I don't remain silent about things that matter. When I see an injustice, I speak up. When I feel strongly about something, I speak up. When I see racism, I speak up. When I see hate, I speak up. And unfortunately, there are people that don't. And that's how I live my life. Hey, I don't have any problem going to sleep at night. I never have. I know what my life's all about. I know how I was raised. I know what I believe in. I know the amount of work I've put in to help minorities in Sacramento with my foundation. You know, I don't want to sound this to be self-serving, but I'm trying to be as transparent as I can. I don't regret anything that I did. I'm still bewildered that there are some, not many, but there are some that don't believe all lives matter, every single one. I don't quite frankly understand how any human being can look at all lives matter, every single one, those six words, and come up with anything that is remotely racist. I don't understand that. What kind of world are we living in?
No, I don't get that either. And then Grant, one more point. I hope I'm not talking too long. You hit on LeBron, you know, quite a bit, and I will tell you, and I'm in my 50s. A lot of my friends, and like I said, I'm a AD as well. I'm so turned off by what we hear, and he definitely has caused some issues. But I don't think he's intentionally doing this. I think he's, I'm going to use the word ignorant. And I don't know if you've ever saw this, but back in August 2020, he's being interviewed, and he's got this book, Malcolm X. And the interviewer is asking about this book. And I've been teaching over 20 years. He is responding like one of my students that has never read the book before. And it's so pathetic, because he has not read the book, and he's, yeah, nothing's changed in 40 years, blah, blah, blah. But I think the thing that not bothers me, but really shows like who he is he obviously has not read the book, but he's not, he's ignorant in the fact that he could present this in such a way that he thinks people would believe that he read the book. And so I don't, when he does these, when he does these tweets, which I think are very damaging, like you allude to quite a bit. I really think that he's a kid. He's probably not well educated. In high school, he probably had to do very little, and he does not know or understand the repercussions of his tweets. You know, I think he's
very hypocritical. I think his tweets have been very damaging. I made a comment, and I have made this comment repeatedly, that he has brought a lot of people to the NBA because of his stardom on the court. But I also believe that he's pushed a lot of fans away from the NBA. As a player, I have the utmost respect for him. It's been an honor and a privilege to watch him play, to announce, his games. Yeah. Throughout his career, I was blessed to announce his first ever NBA game in Sacramento. But I don't have any respect for him off the court. I think he's very dangerous and callous with his tweets. I think it's very unfortunate. And I think he's really tarnished his legacy.
Do you think that he has people around him that would tell him, like, not this is
no,
not
I don't, that do doesn't it. Happen. I think he does it on his own. And I don't think he cares. He doesn't care. He's LeBron James. I mean, the league doesn't do anything. I mean, when he put that unbelievably awful tweet out towards the Columbus police officer that had shot the young lady who was getting ready to stab another lady, the NBA, and he said, "You're next," to the police officer, and subsequently deleted the tweet after. But, you know, you didn't hear the NBA come out with a statement. You know, they didn't stick up for the Columbus Police Department in an act of really a heroic act. Many people called it, by the police officer, an instantaneous decision. You know, it's interesting. I have a lot of friends in law enforcement, so I've talked to them about these types of situations. And they say, you know, people don't understand that, you know, in many instances, you have a split second to make a life and death decision. And he said, you know, and we know this, the police don't always make the right decision. And we've seen it. I mean, you know, Derek Chauvin, I mean, you know, I don't know anyone that is defending Derek Chauvin. I mean, what he did he committed murder on George Floyd. But there are a lot of instances where there is a police shooting. You know, in this case in Columbus, Ohio, think about that. The police officer comes on the scene. The 16-year-old has her arm cocked with the knife and is getting ready to stab another person. And the police officer takes action. I've never been in law enforcement, but I'm just trying to use common sense here. How could anybody possibly fault the police officer for trying to save an innocent person's life? You know, and yet for LeBron to put out that type of a tweet is irresponsible and it's damaging. He has over 51 million followers on Twitter. I mean, and it's just, it's appalling to me. It's appalling to me.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I agree with that. I'm just using type. I think the guy is extremely ignorant, you know, but you're right. I mean, I'm picturing that in my head as you're explaining it. So I've seen that video multiple times. So, you know.
Hey, thanks for the call. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, Grant, I thank you for your time. You have a great evening.
Hey, you too. Call again. Really enjoyed that conversation. You know, again, I'm not sitting here absolving all of the incidents involving police in this country. We all know there are some bad cops. We've seen it on video. We know there's a real problem in this country. Yeah, I've been very honest about this. Most of my friends down here are people of color. I've had all of these conversations with my friends down here, and they've shared with me some of the stories that they've had with law enforcement. And it's not pretty. And I don't deal with that. You know, I never had to have my father, you know, tell me, you know, what to do if I get pulled over by a police officer. I never had that conversation. And yet all of my friends down here that are of color, and I say that because, again, I've been very open about this. Some don't want to be called black. Some don't want to be referred to as African American. We have a large Caribbean population down here. And you know, again, I've had this conversation with many people about how they want to be referred to. So I say people of color, and I've heard all their stories, and we have a problem. Do I think it's a rampant problem? No, I don't, but it's a problem and it needs to be talked about. And if you don't want to talk about it, or if you don't think it's a problem, then you're being naive. Again, we're talking about we're not talking about all law enforcement officers being bad, just on the contrary. But, you know, all of my friends down here and all the people across the country, they're not making up stories. They're not making it up. So, you know, I know we got off the track there a little bit, but I really appreciate Ron's call. I just think that you in this, I guess when you have a following like LeBron, you have responsibility, in my opinion, and the responsibility is enormous. And I think he has really gone overboard. I think he's been irresponsible with his platform. And I think he's turned a lot of people off to the, I don't think, I know, because I've talked to a lot of people that don't watch the NBA anymore. And they talk about LeBron and some of the other things that have gone on with other athletes and other sports as well. So, you know, I know a lot of people are disturbed. I am. I don't have any problem saying that. I hate the social messaging by the NFL. I'm bothered by it. I'm not bothered to a point where I have not watched the games, but it bothers me. I think it's wrong. I think it's absolutely wrong. Again, I've used some examples today, right? Inspire change. You know, end racism as if we're all racist. I mean, stop it already with these messages. You know, in the NFL, you know, it takes all of us. Yeah, no kidding. That was the point of my tweet on May 31st. All lives matter, every single one. It takes all of us. Yeah, I don't know why that is so hard to understand. I really don't. I don't understand why that is so difficult to understand. It's really unfortunate. All right, let's get back to some more phone calls and chime in with Jeff. Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, Grant. On that subject, let me tell you what Martin Luther King said. King was, this is on Google, and I don't want to get on to this tangent, but King was critical of Black Power movement, and he stated in August of 1967 speech to the SCLC, "Let us be dissatisfied until the day nobody will shout white power, and when nobody will shout Black Power." And that's, to me, that equals what you said. All lives matter. You tie that quote into that paragraph Martin Luther King is saying, it's the same thing.
Yes, it is. And I appreciate you chiming in. You know, I was fired by a company that's owned by the Church of Latter-day Saints in Salt Lake City. And I was fired by a company that doesn't have one minority on their board. You can look it up. Google it. Just go to Bonneville International Leadership. Google Bonneville International Leadership. Just Google it right now. Bonneville International Leadership. Or Google it when I'm off the show. And scroll down and look at the people that run their company. Every single person is either a white male or a white female. Every single one. And I was fired because they needed to show everyone that they support Black Lives Matter. And I was the sacrificial lamb. We're going to fire Grant and make an example so that we look good in our Salt Lake City offices with our entire white staff on our board. It's right there. Just Google it. Bonneville International Leadership. It's right there. And look at all the photos. And you let me know if you see a minority in that company on their website. Again, it's a disgrace is what it is. It's an absolute disgrace. There's nothing else I can say. It's disgraceful. All right. Hey, if you want to get in on the show today, all you got to do is raise your hand and I'll put you right on. All right. Let's get along to some more phone calls. And it's Alfred. Hey, Al, how are you today?
Good, Nate. How are you doing?
Good. What's happening?
You know, I did look up that company and I was laughing at myself. You know what? I wonder, what is the demographic makeup of the Mormon Church? I mean, how many African Americans parishioners do they have?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm not going after the Mormon Church. I'm going after Bonneville International. They are owned by the Church of Latter-day Saints, but I'm not making this into, you know, me against the Mormon, you know, I don't.
No, I know. I was just wondering, like, you know, speaking to, you know, the rich white board of directors for the company. But just to get to my call, really happy to see Matthew Stafford, you know, more or less get the monkey off his back so far as his first playoff win. He played well, but, you know, the defense and special team stepped up and played well. So, you know, it's a team game. It's not just the quarterback. And, you know, he was efficient. I mean, you know, they got Akers back, which is a huge loss before the season started. And he's a force deep. I mean, I don't follow college. I don't know if you knew him coming out. You follow college, but he's got speed and power. He can bring it both ways.
Well, he was severely missed, and the fact that he is even back from an Achilles is absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, it really is. No one thought that he would be back. You got to give him a lot of credit, but you know, it just gives them depth in the backfield. Now, okay, everyone expected them to win, and they did. Now, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens in Tampa Bay this weekend.
All right. Now he's going up against a guy that he got his first win, and Brady's going for his 37th. So it's gonna be a challenge. But you know, And I don't just say this as a Rams fan, but, you know, when Steve Young finally got his championship, you know, you've spoken to this. It's nice to see nice guys like coaches like Andy Reid. And I was kind of happy when Dirk Nowitzki got his first championship. And I never would have thought I'd be happy for any team from Dallas in any level. But I was really happy for Dirk when they finally got it, you know.
Yep, I was too. And, you know, again, everyone expected the Rams to win yesterday, and they did. Now let's see. Now they're going on the road to take on the defending Super Bowl champs, and let's see what let's see what we're talking about next Monday.
Right. Oh, exactly. I totally agree. And as to speak to the Cowboys, I mean, come on. You know, Dak is just disgraceful that he's condoning the dangerous situation.
Yeah.
And really, you spoke to this. I mean, look in the mirror, man. I really felt watching that game, it was 23-7 Niners, and you know I'm a Rams fan. I'm watching with my nephew who's a Niner fan. I'm saying, you know, this game should be like at least 34-7. They were just dominating them. They were running the ball. They were running the ball down their throats, you know, and Garoppolo was precision passes. But then Garoppolo let loose with that one bad throw.
That was terrible.
And that's kind of where you, as a Niner fan, I think, and I know you, and I agree with your statements on Garoppolo, by the way, he's definitely underappreciated, but he can, if on occasion, just let loose with that, my God, you know, Stafford does the same
thing. He also made a bad mistake on the quarterback sneak. He did not allow Trent Williams to get set for a count. And that's on the quarterback. You know, the quarterback's got to be aware of that. And, you know, that would have prevented Dallas from even having the ball. If he had waited a half second more on that quarterback sneak, we would have never had the final sequence by the Cowboys. So that was a mistake on his part, too. No question about
it. You know, my brother was talking about that. He's a dire Niner. He said, you know, why was he even resetting Williams? I mean, it was a 6 inches for the first down. Why was he even trying to reset? My brother was going on about exactly what you just said, but why was he even trying to reset him when he has 6 inches? Yep. And you know, Garoppolo's got this phenomenal career record for going for it. I mean, for quarterback sneaks. But, you know, the Niners are going to give Green Bay everything they can handle. You know, they're going to have
They got to have Nick Bosa on the field, and they got to have a healthy Fred Warner, because if they don't, they're not going to beat Green Bay. Nick Bosa absolutely has to be on the field. You know, he's in concussion protocol, and, you know, Warner's got to be healthy, too, with the ankle. So we'll see. Hey, Al, it's always good talking to you. You have a good rest of the day.
Thank you for taking my call.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much. Hey, if you want to be next, all you need to do is raise your hand. Hey, while I have a moment, I talked about Super Draft yesterday. And I want to thank those that reached out. I have left you all messages for those of you that wanted more information on Super Draft. And we really got the ball rolling now. A couple of people signed up today. I'm really ecstatic about that. I had some conversations with some of you. And all you need to do is look at grant.winthistime.com. grant.winthistime.com. All you got to do is look at the video. You're under no obligation. and we'll have some fun. Even if you sign up and want to be on my team and create your own team, hey, you know what? If 2 or 3 months down the road you don't like it, no, you can stop anytime you want. So check it out. The video is very interesting. Grant.winthistime.com. Hey, if you want to get in on the show today, before we wrap it up, hit your hand icon, raise your hand, and we will do it. NBA tonight, only two games on the schedule. One has the Warriors and the Pistons. The Kings are at home tomorrow against the Pistons, and then they hit the road. I got to tell you, if the Kings, who lost to the worst team in the Western Conference, the Houston Rockets, on Sunday, if they lose to the Pistons tomorrow night, okay, the Pistons are 10-32. If the Kings lose to the Pistons tomorrow, when the Pistons are on a back-to-back, that may go down as the worst loss of the season. Could happen, because you never know who is showing up for the Sacramento Kings night to night, right? You never know. You just never know. So as the week progresses, we'll talk a lot more about the NFL playoffs. As we're down to four teams in each conference, we've got the NBA and anything else that's going on in the world of sports. We will deal with it right here. Really good calls today. Really appreciate it. And I can't thank you enough. Spread the word. Tell your buddies about me coming on weekdays at 3 o'clock right here on Listen App. My podcast on Friday, I got a very interesting guest, a guy that I worked with back in the late 90s in Bristol, Connecticut, at the ESPN headquarters when I was hosting game night on ESPN radio. And I met him then, Bob Valvano, Jim Valvano's brother. Bob himself has just overcome a bout of cancer, and fortunately he's in remission. He's a great guy. Love him. Just a quality man. And he is somebody that I've been grateful to know for so long. Again, I met him in 98, 99, when I was working at ESPN radio during the NBA lockout. That was some time in my life. I was off the air at 7 o'clock on Friday, would go home, eat, pack a bag, go to the airport for a red eye from Sacramento through Dallas through Chicago on United, and then hook up Chicago to Hartford, Connecticut, would land in Hartford, Connecticut, would go to the National rental car, hop in a rental car, drive 20 minutes to the hotel in Bristol, the Ramada Inn across the street. It's either the Ramada or the Radisson. I think it was the Ramada. Sleep for 4 hours, get up, walk across the street to ESPN, and then spend all day getting ready for the show. And then I would host Saturday night game night from 7 in the evening until 1 in the morning with Tony Bruno or Jody Ambrosio or Bob Valvano or Chuck Wilson. Then on Sunday, we would be there at 1 in the afternoon to watch all the football games. And then I would host game night again from 7 in the evening until 1 in the morning, go back to the hotel, get up at about 5, drive back to the airport to catch a 7:20 flight nonstop to San Francisco, then get on a commuter flight from San Francisco to Sacramento, drive home, shower, have some lunch, get in the car, and drive down to the radio station and do my show. And I was doing that 3 weekends a month. I did that in September, October, November, December, and January. And then the lockout ended. And on February 5th, the 50-game season began. And as soon as the season ended, they called me and they wanted me to work again. And that didn't go over well with my wife at the time. We had had a we had just had our second child. And I get it, you know, being away that much. And then they actually offered me a full-time job at ESPN Radio, and I turned it down because I had no guarantee of doing play-by-play. And it was the right decision to make. But that was a lot of fun back then. So Bob Valvano is going to be on with me Friday if you don't like that. Hey, make it a fabulous rest of the day. Stay safe. And we'll talk to you next time right here on Listen Up. Grant Napier saying so long, everybody.